I forgot to mention that Joyce had cataract surgery on Tuesday, and so she's taking today off. I guess she wants to be able to read those notes a little bit better than she can yet. So Karen is here, and we're thankful for Karen to play for us today. Thank you, Josh. I'm sure that we all know that there are different classes of seatings on airplanes. You know, there's those first class passengers near the front of the airplane. You know, they've got those overstuffed seats. By the time I get on the airplane, they're drinking their cocktails or their wine. Got out Time magazine or something. They look so relaxed and happy. I guess on some planes there's also business seating as well. I'm not sure exactly what's involved in that. I've never got to go on the any of the business seats, but I assume they probably have a little bit more space that you can stretch out in a little bit better. Then there's the economy section, which is where I always sit. You know, the people in the economy section, they're the last ones to get to go onto the plane. They get to compete with each other, trying to find places in those overhead compartments to put your little suitcase or your bag. And then you sit down on a seat that keeps getting smaller year after year. And you get to, you know, fight for the armrest with a total stranger. And you have the leg room that's just perfect for a 10-year-old child. Just one time in my life, I would like to be able to fly first class and see what that's like. I'd like to be served something other than a bag of those miniature pretzels. It's back. It was off for a minute. Oh. No, that's not it. Okay. Test 1-2. Testing 1-2. Testing 1-2. Test 1. Test 1-2. Well, listen, I'm just going to go. Oh, we got some. That sounds pretty good. Does to me. Can y'all hear me in the back? I'm gonna go ahead and that's why I took the mask off. I'm gonna do the best. But I want to tell you that the airlines did not invent different classes of seating. Back in the during the westward movement in our nation, stagecoaches actually had different class seatings in the stagecoach. If you were first class in the stagecoach, Jesus said, "Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there will be my servant also." Wherever Jesus is in the world, helping people, His servants are there. His church is there. To be a servant like Jesus, according to our text, we must deny ourselves. Jesus said, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves." Self-denial is it's nothing we really enjoy. Indeed, it's in direct opposition to our natural inclinations, the drive of human beings to take care of ourselves, to feather our own nest, to secure our comfort, our fortune above everything else, to look after number one. That's what naturally is at work within us. Let's be honest. We all want to be first-class ticket holders. We want to be in those places of comfort, of being pampered, taken care of. We don't want to have to get outside the coach in the hot sun, in the mud, and have to push. But Jesus said, those who are His followers deny themselves. We must be rid of the attitude that we deserve that first class ticket so we can be free to be servants of Jesus, to be His hands in a troubled world. We have to die to our self-interests in order to serve others. You remember that story that Jesus told of the Good Samaritan? A man was on the road to Jerusalem, and he was beaten by robbers and robbed and left to die in a ditch. And along came a priest on his way to the temple, and he saw the man in the ditch, but he didn't stop to help. He went on towards Jerusalem. And then along came a Levite who worked in the temple, and he also saw the injured man, but he did not stop to help. He continued on. And then there came the Samaritan. He saw the injured man. He had compassion in his heart, and he stopped to help. He bandaged up his wounds. He put him on his donkey, and he took him to an inn where he could rest, and even paid for his lodging. Now, we could make all kinds of excuses for the priest and the Levite. I'm sure they had good reasons why they didn't stop. I mean, I know that if a priest or a Levite touched a body that was dead, and this man might have been dead, they didn't know for sure perhaps, but that would disqualify them from serving their term in the temple. So, you know, they knew people were counting on them at the temple. You know, they had excuses not to stop. Or maybe they had to start their shift at a certain time, and they knew if they stopped to help the man, then they would be late and people were counting on them. And so they didn't stop. We don't really know what their excuses are, but they had them in their minds and perhaps in their hearts. They had their reasons for not stopping. But the Samaritan, he denied himself those excuses. He set aside his agenda, the management of his time and even his resources for the sake of this stranger who is in need of help. Jesus said, if we're going to follow Him, we must deny ourselves for the sake of Christ and His work, for the sake of others who are in need. when Mahatma Gandhi was in prison, he translated a poem from Sanskrit called True Religion that was written by a 16th century Hindu poet. It says, "Nothing is hard to him who, casting life aside, thinks only this, how may I serve my fellow man?" You see, when we deny ourselves, when we cast aside ourselves and our interests, our agendas, our schedules, when we cast those aside, then it frees us to be able to serve our fellow men and women in need. As Christians, haven't we died to ourselves? Is that not the symbol of our baptism, the burial of the old self, and then the rising up, the birth of a new person in Jesus Christ? The scriptures say, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away. It's dead and buried. The new has come. We are to deny ourselves, die to ourselves, that we might live for the mission to which Jesus calls us. And he's probably going to interrupt our lives when he makes that call. So get ready. It will be inconvenient when someone needs help. We had something else planned for our time or for our resources. Jesus will interrupt us, but just be aware, when you are interrupted, it may very well be the call of Jesus for you to serve Jesus by serving someone else. He says to be a servant, we must take up our cross. If anyone want to become my disciples, my followers, let them take up their crosses daily and follow me. A cross is not only a symbol of Christ's death, but it's a symbol of the salvation that we have through Jesus' death and resurrection. But the meaning here of the cross in this passage, as I understand it at least, is the suffering and the burden of other people. When Jesus calls us to take up the cross daily, he's talking about us taking up the burden and the struggles and the suffering of someone else and helping them. Richard Rohr wrote, "Only by solidarity with other people's suffering can comfortable people be converted. Otherwise, they are disconnected from the cross of the world, of others, of Jesus, and finally of their own necessary participation in the great mystery of dying and rising." When we take up the cross of someone else who's struggling, we are following in the very life of Jesus himself. A few years back, a 9-year-old Austin Gatewood heard on television about the plight of orphans with AIDS in Zambia. And so he thought, how can I help them? What can I do? And he thought, boy, it would be great if they could have a school. And so he decided he wanted to find some way to build a school. So he created a fundraiser called Hoops for Hope. And it became a national phenomenon that raised millions of dollars throughout the country to raise funds to build a school for these orphan children with AIDS in Zambia. He felt the burden of those children, and he took up the cross. While most of us are hunkering down in our homes to avoid the virus, Let us not forget those EMTs, those nurses, those doctors who go into, and physical therapists and respiratory therapists, all those folks at the hospitals, they go into work every day exposed to a virus that could kill them, that they could take home to their families, and make them sick and lose their lives. It's unbelievable the crosses that they are bearing for the sake of other people. They are indeed incredible examples for us of those who take up the cross of others. We heard about the death of John Lewis, congressman from Georgia, this weekend. And we'll be hearing lots of stories about him and of his life and how he took up the cross of African Americans who were not even allowed to vote in this country, not even allowed to go to certain restaurants and hotels and restrooms, continually victims of racism. And he spent his life taking up the cross of those who are being discriminated against in our country. I heard a story this week about a woman whose husband was in an elderly care facility suffering with Alzheimer's. And she had assured him that she would be by his side and watch over him, and then found out when he had to go into this home that she could not go in there to visit him. And she felt the burden of his confusion and anxiety and fear being without his wife. And so when she found out the facility was looking for a dishwasher, she applied and got the job so she could be there with her husband and help carry his cross. We can take up the crosses of many people that we come in contact with, that God places before us. We can take up the cross of an elderly person in our neighborhood who might be lonely and afraid, or the impoverished folks living in the trailer parks just a mile or so away from us, or a student who's struggling with his or her studies, or a poor woman fighting addictions. There's so many people who are being crushed by the crosses of illness and loneliness and poverty and racism. And God places them before us, places them in the ditch that we are passing. But we can stop and take up their cross. That's what it means to follow Jesus. Mother Teresa said, "I do what I can where I am with what I have." Ironically, when we give our lives away to Jesus, that is when we truly find our lives and find ourselves. Jesus said, "For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will save it. For what does it profit them if they gain the whole world, but lose or forfeit themselves?" The great Albert Schweitzer wrote, "I don't know what your destiny will be, but the only ones among you who will really be happy are those who have sought and found how to serve." My friends, we can gain fame and fortune and beauty and power and still be lonely and miserable and unfulfilled. But we will find purpose and satisfaction in life if we live a life of service, if we deny ourselves and take up the burdens, indeed the crosses, of others. Our happiness is not the result of a first-class ticket. Fulfillment in life comes from living a life in the service of Jesus Christ, who calls us to serve others. So let us take up our cross and follow Jesus, for we have His hands. We are His hands to a world in need.